Ready to start over?
Yeah, come to order.
Let's come to order. This is the November 28th, 2022 Clallam PUD Commission meeting. It's hybrid. And we're calling for comments from the public. So if you have comments, please raise your hand. Okay, well, go ahead, Christine.
Hi, I have one request, and it's regarding our presentations that are given. We're going to have one given again today, and it's brought this back to mind. I had sent an email in previously requesting that perhaps the PUD could consider making our presentations also have the audio attached or the video attached with the audio, and that way we would be able to use them, you know, outside of just the meeting. I had a couple of occasions where I sent past presentations to the public to look at, and of course, not being able to sync up the audio with the video part of, or the video with the audio, makes it not as meaningful. So I was wondering if the PUD would consider just for the presentations, making them a video with audio.
Okay, well, staff will look into that.
Look into that, yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay, thanks.
Good suggestion, Christine.
Yeah.
And also, if it is a you know, an issue with the PUD having some, whatever could be, not an issue, but just, you know, might be an obstacle for people, you know, maybe staff wise, I would be happy to as a volunteer do that service for you.
Wow. Okay.
So you can keep that in mind.
Volunteerism, that's great.
yeah, because I found that the presentations are just fabulous. And, of course, without Johns or whoever has created the presentations narrative, we lose a lot of meaning. And you know how a sentence can be a lot of meaning can be given to some of these statements that isn't always in a line with the actual message.
Christine, if we aren't able to put the audio, perhaps a second would be putting the text or some written words of what they would have said.
Yeah, but see that makes the person that's actually looking at the presentation have to do more reading. So it's good to hear, you know, with the narrative, they're actually, you know, explaining what is on the slide. You know, so if you have to look at the slide and read, you know, documentation for it at the same time, I don't know that it would be as effective of a learning tool or a learning device. Just my interpretation of that.
Thank you, Christine.
Yes, thanks. Sure.
Yes. Thank
other
you.
Questions?
I'd like to make one point. It's weird hearing yourself. I'd like to make one point that the recordings do have the audio of the presentation, but it is very hard to sync up the audio with the presentation, but that is another way to be able to hear the recording. So, thank you.
Other questions, comments? Okay, our next item is agenda revisions. Sean, do we have any?
Yeah, we have a on business items. When you get down to F, it automatically goes to A and B again. For some reason, it should be G and H as the last two.
Mine does have G and H.
Yeah, it's been good. It's been,
you got a corrected one. But the one on the website is incorrect.
Okay, any other?
That's it.
Okay, thank you. Okay, moving on to the consent agreement. These were sent out previously. There are four items on there. Do we have comments, questions, or a motion?
I move that we accept the consent agenda.
I'll second the motion.
It's been moved and seconded to accept the consent agenda for November 28, 2022. Any further questions or discussion?
Yes, sir.
Okay, good. So it has been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda for November 28, 2022. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Moving on to business items, our first item is bid award recommendation for 40-foot man-lift bucket truck. what's that, reference N23458. Terry, you've got a full agenda here. You're dominating our...
dominating the meeting for a little while. So I've got four items coming up right in a row. The first one is that 40-foot bucket truck, but then we've got a few others. And I was hoping to just kind of talk to you for a minute about the climate and buying trucks right now.
And what,
some of the things we're seeing. And then would that be okay? And then work through that?
It's probably not going to be good news. But yeah.
It's not. So in July, I came to you guys and got permission to go to bid earlier because of these long lead times. The other thing that's changing quite a bit, we talked about at that time, is pricing.
Yeah.
So by getting this head start, we're hoping to help with pricing. We're hoping to help shorten the lead times, the build times a little bit, and keep us in good equipment while we're doing that. So in July, we got budgetary quotes that we set the budget by to order these things. That was what, 4 or 5 months ago. And so now we've gotten the bids back from those, and the news isn't great. So things have gone up, and I cannot say for sure this is the last time they're going to go up, but they range from about going up about 8 or 9% up to as much as 20%. And the build times, some of them are out there 1,875 days, some of them are 1,500 days. And I'll be honest, the ones that they're saying are 1,500 and 1,800 days, they've already told me they're 6 years out. They won't even give us the firm price until 5 years from now. And we're not looking at those vehicles. The build times are just too long. I wanted to take just a minute before we go through this and let you know that we've been looking at other options for as we move forward until the market changes some, and it has to. You know, it started out about 5 years ago, cabs and chassis. We were waiting on cabs and chassis, and these build times started getting a little bit longer. Prices started creeping up a little bit, and now cabs and chassis seem to be fairly readily available in the larger trucks. Not so much for one-ton trucks and things like that. But the larger trucks, that's working out well. We went from cabs and chassis right into the chips for the computers in these vehicles. And that held us up for the last 2 years. Things came in very late. good news is that's looking good now. Problem now this year is apparently hydraulic cylinders. Seems odd to me that's such a big thing because it seems like it's just kind of a plunger, right? It's
a commodity, more or less.
The people that are building trucks could actually make their own cylinders, it seems like, too. But that's what we're hearing is one of the bigger items right now, that that we're short of, the supply chain issues and these hydraulic cylinders. So what we're talking about doing is, you know, it used to be we would keep trucks for about 30 years and we'd keep bandaging them together. And Gary Moore started a program a number of years ago where he was trying to reduce that, replace trucks in a more timely manner to save maintenance on them.
Yeah, I remember that. We were looking at maintenance costs versus replacement. So.
Yeah, and it's all of the software that's out there for that, all the folks that I'm talking to, you know, that about 10 years is where it starts to turn a little bit. You can get a little more. We've shortened our times from about 25 to 30 years down to about 15 years on the average. So we're doing a lot better that way, but it's really difficult in this climate. So we're going to have to make a couple of changes to that until the market changes, I think. And one of those, one of the changes would be to kick our replacements back out to about 20 years. Just figure we're going to eat a little bit more of that maintenance, but not be ordering as many vehicles and spending these exorbitant costs, as we're doing that. And then the other thing is, in the 2023 budget, we're replacing a 55-foot bucket truck for Evan Kaiser's crew down in Carlsberg, and we're also replacing his digger derrick. Just so happens both trucks that Joe Greenstreet and I ordered, about 20 years ago for the crew that we were on at that time. Best trucks that we really have, but they're getting to that magic age. The bucket truck is an digger derrick is an 03, and the bucket truck is an 09.
Wow.
So they're up at that age, especially the digger derrick. Still pretty good trucks, but you got to start looking at things like ring gears and pins in the booms, and it's time for some attention to those. So the plan that we're looking at is once we get through this build cycle that we're in right now, I think rather than looking at buying the next trucks, we take those trucks and we rebuild them. And I think we can do it in-house.
Yeah.
We're looking at space. We've done some shuffling out at the Port Angeles Operations Center to to make some more room out there. And we have the facilities crew now in what was the old transformer shop. That transformer shop has a real heavy-duty sky crane in there. A crane's got rails down up at the ceiling, you know, posts alongside them that it moves on a track. You can, and so we could actually pull a truck like this into that space, have the crane and everything, and then we'll have to, it's not ideal because we'll have to move the parts that are coming off it down two bays to have another bay. But we're working on logistics and how we're going to make that happen. And I think we can save a lot of money. And, well, I think we can keep vehicles longer that way and be very used to the equipment that we're using. And but we're going to have to keep them in good shape to make that worthwhile. So we've got some plans. We're really hoping that in the next 5 or 6 years, after this lengthy build, I hope that we're looking at now, hopefully we're going to see some changes to the market. So beyond that, we have 4 vehicles we're going to look at today. We've been very careful, you know, in looking at the bids and choosing which ones we get. Part of the, you know, some of the trucks that look okay, the longest lead times also are the most expensive. So one of the manufacturers kind of ruled themselves out on most of the things. The other two that are competitive, Verslift is becoming more competitive in some of the bigger trucks, but they haven't really gotten it yet. That's who we use for our squirt booms and stuff. So as we go through these 4, and I suggest that, you know, that we move forward on the bids for those. You know, we have looked at them really closely, and after going through the bids and make sure they match the specs, this is what we found. So the first one that we're talking about is the 40-foot squirt boom. And that we have chosen. So we had bids from Altec, Terex, and Versalift. Altec's bid went up 54.56% on this truck since July. Terex's went up 40.7%, and Versalift's went up 27.06%. So, and this is one of the higher ones, but it's, you know, it's indicative of what's going on right now. So, looking at it, build times, Altec was up at 1,500 days. Terex was 480 to 770 days. Versalift is at 400 to 420 days. They're the lowest bidder. We're very familiar with the trucks that matched all the specs of the ones we have now. So we would recommend that we move forward with the Versalift bid for the 40-foot serviceman bucket truck, the squirt boom.
Now, this, some years ago, we standardized like a freight locker. That would help, I would think, with rebuilding these.
Yes, and we have been at those for quite a while now. The shop is very good with those trucks. We've got all
of that. We had a lot of dogs and cats.
Yes, everything that we're talking about today comes with a Freightliner cabin chassis.
Good, great.
Okay, so it's the booms is where you land, the type of truck it is, the length, and what the booms for is what's the difference in them. But they're all, the squirt boom is the only single axle. The others will all be double-axle Freightliners.
Okay. Questions, comments? We're going to take each one at a time. So.
Well, Terry, I appreciate you looking for alternatives given what's happening in the marketplace. And I can't help but think that it's going to be – I don't know about how long it will last, but it's I'm assuming it's going to be cyclic and that we'll get back to a more normal market at some point, but who knows when that will be.
It's just transitory.
Yeah, the inflation. And
yeah, and I agree with you. We're hoping that somebody's going to step up to fill these voids of manufacturing parts. I mean, somebody else will step into the, like we're hoping for transformers and so many other things, that there's voids out there and we're just waiting for some entrepreneur to step in there and fill those voids. I'm amazed the manufacturers aren't doing it myself. And maybe that's where we'll be in 4 years from now. Maybe Altec will be making their own cylinders then. I would be if I was them.
This chip shortage, is that impacting things?
Not so much. They've kind of answered they have more people building chips. They're buying from a broader market also. Chips aren't all coming from the U.S. and Mexico and Canada. Now we're picking some up from overseas and wherever we can get good ones.
Yeah. Do we have a motion?
I move that we accept bid award recommendation for a 40-foot main lift bucket truck, reference number N-23458.
I second that motion.
It's been moved and seconded to authorize a bid award for a diesel freight liner M2106 4x4 cab chassis truck with 40-foot man lift bucket from the lowest responsible bidder, Time Manufacturing and Company, doing business as VersaLift. The not to exceed contract cost is $236,332, not including Washington State sales tax. Do we have any comments or questions further?
No.
Okay. So let's call for the question. Do we have approval?
Aye.
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 Good. All right. Thank you. What is this Time Manufacturing Company doing business as VersaLift?
Time Manufacturing is the mother company.
Okay.
They bought out VersaLift a number of years ago. It happens quite a bit in the large truck of almost all automotive industries. But, the mother company is Time.
Okay, we'll move on to the next one.
And the next one is a 55-foot bucket truck, I believe. I think I've got them in order here.
Yes, sir.
And that one is it's a 55-foot bucket truck. It's for a frontline truck for the heavy crew down in Carlsberg. So the 55-foot truck, again, we have significant increases, 1,825-day build time for the Altec. So the Altec, the build time and the cost was astronomical. That one's gone up 46.85%. Kind of took them out of the running. They matched specs, but the build time and the cost kind of puts us out there. VersaLift did not have a boom in that length. And VersaLift is kind of just getting into these heavier trucks, and their booms aren't quite as heavy as the other booms either. But they couldn't match the spec for the boom. Terex, which is, this truck matches all the specs. It's got a 480-day to 770-day build time. So we're looking at a year and a half to just over 2 year build time. So it should show up in late 2024. That's not too bad for what we've been doing. Could be a little longer, about 770 days. That one came in at $508,473, and we recommend that you approve moving forward with the bid for the Terex 55-foot bucket truck.
You said five what?
Yeah, $508,473. And that is a 23.88% increase over the
483-481 price. That's what my packet has.
So, but you're including sales tax?
I am not positive. I did not believe that any of these had sales tax in them.
Yeah, we have $483,000 and some change.
So then this must have the sales tax in it also.
Not including tax. $483,481.
Yeah, I know, but he's giving us numbers that does.
508.
Yeah, it does include.
Yeah, that. And I've got that, and that's the price that I have here. It's $508,473.
So when we pass something like this, it's got to have the tax with it, doesn't it? Or because if it says not to exceed $483,000, and yet with tax it's $508,000.
Well, it says not including Washington.
Yeah, on the memorandum it says not including.
Okay. So
that's typical, or at least from the presentations that I've made or asking permissions in here, the sales tax typically isn't figured at this point. It's referenced that it's not included.
You've got to pay the tax man. So.
Yeah. But that truck, it meets all the specs, and it was the lowest responsible bidder. That matched.
It's a year and a half.
Yeah.
What's the consequences of lowering the spec of the booms and the first of the
Well, in this... So you can get away with it in the city and stuff, but our problem is we're working out on right-of-way so much, we're going to crack frames and bodies, and, we need to, and our specs are not astronomical. We have backed them up you know, to try to be more
yeah.
competitive in this market. But we do have to have certain standards that we just can't go outside of, or we're going to be working on it more than we are now.
So, Terry?
Yes,
real quick.
This is the
So if you look, and this was made by in contracts. I did notice that also, but this is the price that I'm seeing.
Okay, saying it in the 5.4%.
Yes.
So why don't we make the motion for the 483 and then.
No, the motion needs to be for the 508-473. It's in the memorandum right here.
But. Okay. What,
not including sales tax.
Give me that number again, please.
508-473.00.
And that's not including?
Not including sales tax.
What about the previous one? Are we okay on that one?
Yeah, that one is right.
And the rest of them seem to line up pretty good. It was just that one that I had noticed in that one box didn't match up.
Yeah, I don't know. The bid sheet that we have is different on that one.
Thanks. Sean, what you just showed me there, did that have two boxes in there for Terex, or did it have two boxes for Versalift?
Two boxes for Versalift.
Okay. I was thinking that possibly it was Versalift that gave two different sizes of booms, and that's why they have different prices.
Yeah.
But neither of them actually matched the spec we were looking for.
Okay.
So I move we approve the bid award recommendation for a 55-foot man lift bucket truck, reference number QU22830.
I second the motion.
It's been moved and seconded to authorize a bid award for a Freightliner model number 114SD cab chassis truck with 55-foot aerial man lift bucket for the lowest responsible bidder. T-Rex Utilities, Inc., the not-to-exceed contract cost is $473. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Terry is spending money here.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll see less next year. The next one is a 60-foot digger derrick. And, again, we got three bidders, Altec, Terex, and Versalift. Altec, again, is by far the highest, up almost 47% from the bid in July, or the budgetary quote. And they're just over 5 years out to build it. Versalift.
Terry,
did really
can you
well.
Move your mic up just a little bit?
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. Thank you. I haven't done this since karaoke.
Go ahead.
So Versalift gave a good bid and everything, but they couldn't meet the spec for the lifting capacity that we need to have for those trucks to do their job. The digger derrick's what sets the poles. It moves all of our heavy. It's a big boom truck with an auger on it and stuff. So Terex, again, had the lowest responsible bid. They're up 20% from what they were in July. And so the price that we have right now and that we, you know, that we recommend that you approve is the Terex 60-foot digger derrick, and that comes in at $660,095. And again, that's a 480 to 770 day build. So a year and a half to 2 years.
280 or what was that?
The cost of the, yeah, it's 480 to 770 days. So a year and a half to 2 years. It's 2.1 years.
You know, it seems like a double insult to have to pay, you know, a premium price and then have to wait.
Well, what I'm not even actually telling you is that these Altec trucks, what the salesman has told me, and a great guy, we work with him all the time, these are six-year builds. They won't even give us a firm price for 5 years.
Yeah.
So anything we're seeing now is just talk. It's yeah. And we aren't buying any of those trucks right now. That's not what these are.
This question is anybody buying those trucks?
You know, the people that buy 10 and 12 and 14 of them a year
seem
to still be ordering them.
Wow.
But it looks to me like this company is making a business model where they want to know that they've got 5 years of work stacked in front of them so that they can get through any downturn in a market or
you know, supply chain issues. I think they've learned something over the last few years, and you know, they're going to take the customer service out of
these
that.
Prices are not tied to any kind of index, or I mean, these are firm.
These are fixed.
So these prices are, I would not say they're fixed. Like I said, Altec is saying that they won't give you a firm price for 5 years until you're in the fifth year of your wait for your 6 year truck. When you're 1 year out, then they will give you a firm quote, as they're saying. Yes, yeah. So you just get yourself in a queue, you wait 5 years, then they give you a price. I don't know how people are doing it with budgets. It's hearing a lot of creative stuff from around. But through the three of these, the Terex is the one that we'd recommend moving forward with, and it is a good bid other than the price. And that comes at other than the $660,095. I'm surprised that the amount that went up also. But.
Okay, do we have a motion?
I move that we accept the bid award recommendation for a 60-foot Digger Derrick truck reference QU22829.
I second the motion.
The move and seconded to authorize a bid award for a diesel Freightlander 114SD cab chassis truck for the 60-foot Digger Derrick from the lowest responsible bidder, Terex Utilities, Inc., not to exceed contract cost of $660,095. All those in favor?
Aye.
All right.
Thank you. And another interesting point here is that when I came to you back in June and asked for the permissions to go early for these, we asked to do the long lead time vehicles for 2023 and 2024. Two of these are 2023 vehicles. Two of them are 2024. That first one we talked about, the 40-foot service bucket, squirt boom, that is a 2024 truck, and we should be getting that at the, in 2024. Just to, the build time on it is 400 to 420 days. Get this in the next 30 days and get it ordered. So we'll be looking at getting that probably February of 2024, unless there's extensions that like we've been seeing. But so it's really showing that this is a good thing, getting started early. It does put us ahead of some people, and also we'll be getting that truck closer to when we need it. So the last truck here is a 70-foot tree trimming truck, a bucket truck for the tree trimmers. Again, the bidders were Altec, Terex, and VersaLift. Altec has the same thing going on with the high price and the long build time. Their spec was good. The truck was good other than that. VersaLift, we had the strength of the boom. Again, they're getting into these heavier trucks now. They haven't quite got it all down yet. And the bucket size. We're going to have trouble fitting some of our guys in the bucket that they put on the end of that boom. And so that brings us back to the Terex. And this one has gone up a little bit less. It's 15.36% from what the budgetary quote was. And it is not to exceed price of $379,071. And that also is a 480 to 770-day build time.
Now, that number is, does that include Washington State sales tax or not?
That I do not believe that any of these include Washington State sales tax.
Darker. I think that's what it says.
Yeah, no, the numbers don't match. Dollars don't match. Okay. Do we have a motion on this one?
I move that we accept the bid award recommendation for the 70-foot tree trimming truck reference QU22828 and QU14437.
I second the motion.
It's been moved and seconded to authorize bid award for a diesel Freightliner M2106 4x4 chassis truck with a 70-foot aerial device from the lowest responsible bidder, T-Rex Utilities, Inc. Not to exceed contract cost is from the lowest responsible bidder, T-Rex. Not to exceed contract cost is $379,071, not including Washington State sales tax. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you guys very much.
That was painful.
Yes, I know it was. And when I come and talk to you next time, I will have some advancements we've made on alternatives and some more ideas. So we will work our best to deal in this market the best we can.
Now, we're talking about rebuilding our own equipment. Is anybody out there doing that?
Yes, and we did it in the past.
Yeah.
We did it, you know, 25 years ago. We
were doing it. Is there a manufacturer that's doing that sort of thing?
There are, but their shops are extremely busy too.
Yeah.
I'm really hoping that we're going to be able to buy ourselves some time and be able to take care of these builds after we've taken care of the very pressing things each day, spend some time working on the rebuilds, you know, and get them out faster than they're building them, get the rebuild done quicker than they can build us a truck and have as good of a truck when it comes out for the next 10 to 15 years.
Well, thank you for thinking outside the box.
Well, and we'll continue doing that. I don't think that we're going to be doing this thing for the next while, but hopefully we will see changes.
Maybe things will get back to normal at some point.
Yeah, even though normal, I think, is a new normal.
Yeah, it's a new normal. Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Thanks, Terry.
Okay, our next item is Resolution 225422, adjusting compensation in terms of employment for Sean Worthington as general manager. I think that this has been talked about. Do we need more definition?
I don't have any discussion.
No, I don't have any further discussion.
Well, do we have a motion?
I move that we accept Resolution 2254-22, adjusting the compensation and terms of employment for Sean Worthington, general manager.
I second the motion.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve Resolution 2254-22, adjusting the compensation and terms of employment for Sean Worthington, general manager of the Public Utility District Number 1 of Clallam County. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Just this one. Switch back to Sean.
Sean, we're happy to have you under signature.
Thanks, Rick. Appreciate it.
Next item is Resolution 2255-22, establishing compensation in terms of employment for John Purvis as General Superintendent. Sean, I think you're...
Yeah, I'll take that one. So before you is Resolution 2255-22, establishing terms of employment for John Purvis, who is our existing Assistant General Manager. And as part of this resolution, he is asked to change his title from Assistant General Manager to General Superintendent. As you all know, John withdrew his request to become the general manager, and since then he has requested to change his title to more align with the duties that he's doing, which is that of a general superintendent. He no longer wishes to pursue becoming general manager, and so he'd like that title change associated with this resolution. On the employment agreement, John is eligible to retire, and this agreement will assist in retaining John for the foreseeable future, and will also allow us to succession plan for some positions coming up in the near future, like a power manager. So staff recommends that the board approve the resolution 2255-22, establishing terms of employment for John Purvis and allowing the general manager and myself to execute a contract with him that's attached to the resolution.
Do we have a resolution?
Yeah. This is a change that I didn't find sufficient justification to warrant support of this. The terminology of the position from, assistant general manager to superintendent, that's fine, but the compensation package and contract, I don't see the justification for doing it.
I move that we accept Resolution 2255-22, establishing compensation in terms of employment for John Purvis as general superintendent.
And I'll second that. The moved and seconded for approval of resolution 2255-22, establishing compensation in terms of employment for John Purvis as the general superintendent. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, our next item is resolution 2256-22, establishing titles and monthly salary ranges for staff employees.
Good afternoon. It's great to be here in person. I think this is the first time in a couple years. So I'm in front of you guys today to ask that you adopt resolution 2256-22, establishing the titles and monthly salary ranges for staff employees. This resolution includes rescinding resolution number 2252-22 and the changes made recognized in bullet 6 within the resolution. To continue to attract and retain the excellent employees we have here at the district, we are proposing a 6% adjustment to the salary ranges that was shown there in the attachment, as well as regrading of the safety manager and the power supply manager with an effective date of January 1, 2023. Any questions?
So the 6% is for non-union?
Yes, it's to address our staff salary, and that is not an increase given to all employees. It's just moving those ranges. So to keep us up to market, we work really hard. That kind of midpoint is to be aligned with the market when we do our comp studies with Milliman and stuff.
Is this awarded somewhat on a merit basis, or is it just 6%?
Yeah, so actually this would not, I guess I could say no guarantee of the 6% to all staff employees because we do merit-based for all of our staff performance appraisals.
Unless you're at the very bottom, then you get the 6% raise. I move that we accept resolution 2256-22 establishing titles and monthly salary ranges for staff employees.
I second the motion.
Okay, so moved and seconded to approve resolution 2256-22 establishing titles and monthly salary ranges for staff employees and rescinding resolution 22252-22. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you.
Where I came from, if you're on the bottom, you were out.
Thanks, Jamie. Next, Jamie.
What happened to paperless things?
Mm-hmm.
We'll get there.
We'll get there.
We'll get there. You use board docs for Energy Northwest. It's all paperless, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You get everybody a pad or a, what's the Well, you can, but you just leave it there. They'll update it.
Yeah.
Okay, our next item is the BPA post 2028 contract discussion. Have anything?
I don't have anything. Do you have anything? No, it's kind of quiet on that issue, unless I'm all ears if somebody heard anything else, Sean.
I don't have anything for that today.
I, you know, I guess it's more appropriate during the commissioners. There was the WAPUTA commissioner education and that cyber crime presentation. Boy, that was sobering. I don't know if you saw
it. Scary, isn't it?
I missed that, but
I took that pages of notes. But that's, I guess that's under the next.
Are you doing one commissioner reports next?
No, I jumped out.
Yeah, he's getting ahead of here. Correspondence communications.
I have two things today. So the first is regarding Northwest River Partners. I received, so after the last meeting, we adjusted our budget number to Northwest River Partners from the annual dues down to 5,000. I received confirmation from Kurt Miller, their executive director, that the dues are what they are, and in an effort to maintain equity among all of their members, you either pay the dues or you don't. So what we need to decide is, do we want to be members or do we not want to be members? And I pulled the invoice from last year, and this will change for next year, but this will give you an idea. So the 2022 dues was $20,660, and the Our Power is Water campaign was $15,490. And then they asked us for an additional contribution for the Snake River Dam campaign, which we did not contribute to. So the dues are $20,000 for the dues and $15-ish for the Our Power is Water campaign. So we need to decide if we want to bring this up at the next meeting and or if you guys want to discuss it now and if we want to still be members or not be members, I guess, is the real question.
They're concerned that $5,000 wasn't acted upon.
Well, it sounds like they could accept it as a donation, but we could not be.
You would never vote.
We wouldn't. Yeah, we would not be members of Northwest River Partners.
And I believe they're going to move to basically how much hydropower each utility.
I've heard that as well, but I don't know what the structure is going to look like. I don't know what our amount would be for next year, but
I'm sorry, what did you say?
They were going to change the views at Northwest River Partners based on how much hydro each utility used.
So your load, basically?
Your
load?
Yeah, your load, yeah. So, you know, that rather than just having a flat views, it sounds irreparable, really.
Yeah.
So, don't know what those numbers would look like, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know yet from Kurt what it would look like for next year, but I anticipate that will come out soon.
Well, I don't support 20,000.
Yeah, I attended the River Partners meeting for them. They're calling the Snake River Dam campaign a success. They're moving on from that to more education and protection of the overall hydro system. Kind of put that in perspective. That was their original charter that was founded on. So I think that's moving in the right direction. Now, whether the state corporate campaign is a success or not, they should have already done that. So they seem to think it is. So.
Well, I haven't heard that, but I don't know that I would believe that. Their whole existence was based on the dealing with the Snake River Dams. And so.
No, that's not true, Jim. I was in the Public Power Council that was formed, and it was formed because of the misconception, misinformation about the hydro system, mainly along the I-5 corridor. And it was thought that there needs to be more education on the overall benefits of the hydro system, not specific to the sewer.
Well, yeah, but that was the gorilla that was, you know, the reason that the hydro system was in trouble, you know.
No.
Well, anyway, I don't agree with supporting them because they had used too much hyperbole. They used misinformation, and and it's unfortunate. And I got a note from Kurt himself, and you know, he appreciates the he enjoyed our time and all of our briefings, but he didn't pay attention to any of the government information I gave him. He ignored it completely and almost made fun of the fact that we had all this government information and it really didn't matter. So I do not support being a member of Northwest River Partners. And I don't know if this is a vote here we're doing or a prelude to another discussion or what, but that's my comments at this time.
Yeah, it sounds like two of you are not in favor, so I can let Kurt know that we won't be moving forward next year.
Let's say that again.
I'll let Kurt know that we're not moving forward for next year. The other thing I had here was Energy Northwest had recently reached out, and I think I told you guys at the last meeting that they're looking to leverage their expertise as a joint operating agency with all the PUDs to go after some of these grants. And so internally we've identified two resiliency grants that we're going to pursue through Energy Northwest. One of them is our SWIM microgrid project we've been planning for a couple of years. It will leverage our community solar as a source that will supply a battery that will operate a microgrid for emergency power supply to our SWIM fiber hut. So we're going to be looking into that one and seeing if we can get funding for that. The other one is undergrounding our Diamond Point distribution system. It's a very outage-prone area, and our overhead line segment is in a very narrow corridor, and so we have a lot of outages. And so we're going to look into that as a possible project to underground that. And if we can get funding, it'd be about a $1 to $2 million project. So as we move forward with those, I'll keep you guys apprised of if we get any grant money.
So that $1 to $2 million, is that what the grant will allow? I think we looked at that before. It's going to be $3 million. So
yeah, it's that they're 50% on this particular one, so the utility will be responsible for 50% of the cost. It's in our long-term capital plan to address that situation out there. So if we can get funding for it, it would just be money ahead for us. So
yeah.
And those are my two things I had for correspondence communications.
Yeah, Energy Northwest has been moving in that direction to be more of a conventional joint operating agency, mm-hmm. and offering more services. And it's probably a no-brainer to go through them for these grants because they're going to be bundling those. And
well, they have the expertise and they have the grant writers on staff.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense.
And I guess the other piece of that, they're going to be going for more money for charging stations, which mm-hmm. we'll see that coming, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner reports. Jim, do you have something?
Not a lot. Just I was in and out of several other committee meetings with PUTA last week, education, which they went over the schedule and topics for the new commissioner briefings and so forth, and probably ought to let Hayes know about the dates in January as a heads up. And then listened into, the energy and board of the executive board and so forth, but nothing to report. So
I guess I'm up.
You're up. I'm sorry.
That's okay. WPUTA did on the commissioner education, a cybercrime insurance, et cetera. This guy named Tom Averine gave the presentation, and I'll give you some of the highlights, at least what I thought, or maybe these are lowlights. In 2017, $1.4 billion of losses from cybercrimes. 2018, 2.7, 3.5, 4.2. 2021, it was almost $7 billion.
It's trending the wrong way.
Yeah, that's just incredible. Wow.
So, is that like ransom money or?
That's from phishing, spoofing, tech support, people showing, it's anything. All crime.
And I would have thought it'd be a lot more, frankly.
It's still big numbers.
Yeah.
Does that include consumer?
Ransomware.
Not just hospital schools. It's just consumers.
Yeah. Supposedly what they can get their arms around.
And then I had all the money that we got to pay to fight the loss of $8 billion.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I agree with you. It sounds...
Well, one of the questions I was asking him, because, see, I can't find it now, but he was talking about if your all your information gets, ransomware, someone gets a hold of all your documents and locks you out of your computer. And he said the average payout was about $75,000. The average recovery cost was in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, to recreate all your programs and et cetera, your databases, your customers.
So they got to figure out what's tolerable.
Yeah. And so I asked him, I said, well, what would you recommend? I mean, you can either pay $75,000 or you can pay $250,000. You pay the $75,000 and the negative externality is that you're emboldening or you're...
This is like the mafia,
exactly.
That's where the idea probably, like it may be the mafia.
It's a crapshoot, too, if they're actually going
to turn it to you back correctly. Basically, his answer was, a shrug of the shoulder.
And nobody has a
recommendation.
Ask for payment in Bitcoin or something
like
that. Yeah. Non-traceable.
And that comes, speaking of Bitcoins. USK, USK, in Washington, it's about an hour north of Spokane. They've got, I think, a grocery store and two residents, but they are a preference customer, and they're looking at putting in a cyber farm. Or what do you call that? A
currency. Bitcoin miner.
They're doing... they have up to a potential of, it says, 500 megawatts.
That's good.
Now, here we are in the contract negotiations with Bonneville. We're talking about 7,000 megawatts. Adding 500 extra, we're talking about augmentation, maybe anywhere from 200 megawatts up to 1,000 megawatts. That might get the system up to 8,000 megawatts. But you've got a little town with like five people in it that potentially could be adding 500 megawatts.
And they have their own utility.
Yeah. They're part of Chelan, I think. They're also,
Pondering.
The Pondering Mill was there.
Yeah.
It's a paper mill.
And they have the Box Canyon Dam. And if I remember the article correctly, they have a contract with Shell to purchase the power for that.
For Shell.
And they'll purchase the RECs to be compliant with CETA.
Well, Shell's involved, it must be a good idea.
The other thing I wanted to bring up was, and something I haven't really been hearing much about, is the Columbia River Treaty is being renegotiated right now. Last was negotiated 60 years ago. The significance of the treaty is that the Canadian, the Columbia River starts in Montana, flows north into Canada, turns left, and comes back down to the state of Washington. Through the treaty, the U.S. and Canada built three dams in Canada, Arrow, Duncan, and Micah. And I think they have about 16 million acre-feet of storage. So if you can imagine what an acre looks like, then add a foot of water on top of that. That's an acre foot. And then you add a million of those and times that by 16, and that's how much storage. Now, the importance of the storage up there is that the Canadians and the U.S. work together on when to release that water. Before they did that, it used to be that if you owned a dam and you needed 100 megawatts, you released enough water to generate 100 megawatts. But that water goes all the way down the dam, down the river, past all these other dams, and it generates power there as well. And what they realized is that they were coordinated and only released enough water for, say, 15 megawatts up here. By the time it got down to the end of the river, they would have their 100 megawatts. So they started coordinating the release of water. And that's what a lot of the dams in Canada does. If this treaty falls apart, that coordination will go away. And I don't anticipate that it will go away because it's both in the Canadian and the U.S. interest. They were holding a lot of flood control for us. Flood control is basically keeping a hole in a reservoir so that water can go into it rather than flooding. And if they refuse to do that for us, then we'll probably have to draft down Coomley to do that. And when you do that, you lose head, and therefore you lose generation. So it could have an impact on the system size when we're going through these negotiations and it's not even being discussed, which I find kind of interesting. Sorry to be long-winded. That's all I've got.
Well, we had a special meeting of the Executive Board of Energy Northwest. You know, California had made the decision to shut down Diablo Canyon, which is a big chunk of power generation in California. They finally wised up and decided, well, maybe that's not such a good idea. So, but in the meantime, they were planning on shutting the plant down so they didn't replenish their fuel supply. So they came to Energy Northwest. We're long on fuel, mainly because of the tailings deal we did some years ago. Anyway, we've got numerous reloads for Columbia. So we approved a deal where we would swap fuel for enriched uranium, and that would be over a five-year period. It's still going to leave us very, very comfortable as far as fuel supply. It kind of saves California's bacon, which I'm not too sure I'm that comfortable with that. That's what we're doing. So, and you know, it's still beneficial because we do get the enriched uranium, which will be fabricated into more fuel and so on. So, and that's about all I have. So, staff reports, conservation update with us. You're on.
So yeah, first I noted today that the agenda calls for conservation, and here I call it energy efficiency in my slides, but for all intents and purposes, it means the same thing.
Can you move your mic up a little?
Oh yeah, of course. Is this better?
Yeah.
Yep. I'll try to speak into it to lean forward a little bit here. So today I plan on talking a little bit about the Energy Independence Act and the biennial energy efficiency targets we have for 2022 and 23, as well as the savings distribution, essentially what sector and programs we're getting the energy savings to meet those targets. I'll talk about compliance costs as relates to the Energy Independence Act, and then a little bit about net metering and some other efforts that we've been engaged with lately. So to start, about a year ago, board adopted a 10-year potential per the Energy Independence Act rule, so an energy savings potential of a little over than 54,000 megawatt hours, and then a target of 4,978 megawatt hours. And already, as of actually September, we've acquired 4,655 megawatt hours. So we're almost at our target already. So we're coming off of years of, you know, very high targets. We have a lot of momentum behind us to acquire these savings with quite a bit of customer interest in our programs. So essentially, you know, we're well on our way to far exceed the target for the two-year period.
What portion of that is RECs?
So this is just the energy savings. So it's not the renewable component. In terms of the energy savings distribution, the bulk of our savings comes from heating measures, which is smart thermostats, heat pumps, or PTCS heat pumps, as we call them, ductless heat pumps, in residential sector and our commercial programs. And for our residential programs, you know, which includes the water heating windows, the new construction there that we have a very small share of, we break it out by program. But on the commercial, the big piece there on the pie includes lighting as well as commercial heating measures. But the bulk of those savings really are from lighting or LED lighting. And in this case, we had a project, large project that completed at the start of the year out of Clallam Bay Correctional Center, where they changed out all of their lighting and converted it to LED lighting. And that alone is about 1.4 million kilowatt hours in energy savings. Also, we have seen a big increase in the residential heating measures, which has been kind of interesting. You know, I perhaps should have foreseen it, but I didn't. But if you remember the heat wave we had last summer, you know, which the net result was a big interest in air conditioning from our customers. And then at the same time, being in the middle pandemic, there were supply chain issues from our heating contractors. So at the start of last, or I should say in the middle of last winter, we saw a big increase in heat pump installations, conversions from electric resistance homes to homes with heat pumps because of the interest in heat pumps that had built up over the summer. And all these customers had ordered heat pumps during the fall, but they didn't start getting installed until in the winter. The net result, though, of the, you know, all the interest in our programs, it means that it's still relatively cheap for us to acquire these energy savings. On a levelized basis, dollar per kilowatt hours, see if I have the net. I guess it should have written down, but we're, you know, about a $15 per megawatt hour in the cost to acquire our energy savings. I should note that on a net basis, we're actually over budget for a conservation program by about, you know, by the end of the year, I'll probably close out with about $200,000 over budget, which partially helped to keep the levelized cost down since the administrative cost is a fixed cost and extra cost is, you know, when we have increase in our programs is we're paying out more rebates, but the energy savings are the same. So when we levelize it on a per kilowatt hour basis, we still have very cheap programs well below BPA's Tier 2 proxy that we use to try to keep our program costs below. Net metering is continuing to grow at quite the pace. Washington state law, the RCW 8060, require that we offer net metering for eligible renewable installations up to a 4% of our winter peak back in 1986, which was a little over 160 megawatt hours. So that cap that we're required to take on net metering is 6.403 megawatt hours. And currently, we have installed in our service territory 3.6 megawatts, mostly of solar. We have one small hydro system that is net metered and a couple of very small wind generators that aren't generating much. So for all intents and purposes, when we talk about net metering, it's really solar that we're talking about.
Do we know how much of that's battery backed up?
I don't have a fixed number, but it's a nominal. It's one or two battery systems that we have currently. Like it's, you know, even, you know, there's a lot of buzz and talk about batteries, but if you talk to most of the local solar contractors we have, they will still try to talk you out of installing batteries, you know, because generally if you're wanting the battery for backup purposes, you know, most of our service territory we're fairly reliable. You know, so you pay a bunch of extra money for backup that you can get much cheap other ways. You know, for instance, if you have an outage that lasts for just a couple of hours, you can much cheaper do that with the traditional fuel fire generator.
Yeah.
There's a lot of talk and interest about batteries, though it's kind of fascinating because there's not a direct correlation with what's really available in the market currently at all. To really show what's going on, though, this is, you know, a similar chart, but instead of having the aggregate solar added year, I have, you know, what's added each year. So as you can see, the past couple of years, you know, we have quite a bit more solar than we did in 2019 and 2022. And then on top of that, we have more solar installed and generally larger installations as well. And what's noteworthy here is during the time frame 2005 to 2017, Washington State had really high incentives for solar. They were paying and up to an additional 54 cents per kilowatt hour on top of net metering, and which that program was renewed. So solar that was installed 2018 through 2020 to get up to 21 cents per kilowatt hour. And even though those incentives are now gone, we're installing more solar, larger solar systems. Like currently, really, the only incentives you can get for solar is net metering that we offer. And then there's federal tax credits that are also available. And then lastly, I just wanted to add some notes to some additional efforts we've been engaged with. Earlier this month, John Purvis, and Colin Young from engineering attended the Energy Innovations Conference that was hosted by the Jamestown Squalum Tribe and co-coordinated by PNNL's Fattel Laboratories. And there was a number of local cities, the City of Forks, City of Squim, City of Preangeles, Collin County was there, Jefferson County, PUD. There was representatives for the tribes, and the whole idea was to, you know, bring various government agencies together to talk about things like climate, renewable energy, resiliency, you know, all this sort of buzzwords that are going around, and where there's grant funding coming from both the state and federal government, with the idea to get us to get together and sort of talk about what our individual needs and interests are and our strengths, see where we can partner, which was kind of an exciting, you know, because many of these entities are customers as well. So it's sort of good to talk to them directly to see where, you know, what they're aligned, where we can partner. And out of that, you know, was trying to sort of build on the some of the ideas that came out there and some of the, you know, renewed relationships with our customers. And, you know, partially Sean stole a bit of my thunder by mentioning the microgrid project downtown Squim. Which, just like Sean was mentioning, that we're working with Energy Northwest to pursue a grant for that project. We're looking at some other grant opportunities from Commerce too. If for some reason we, you know, things doesn't work out with that specific project with Energy Northwest. Also, last week I was out and met with the Macaw Tribe to talk about a potential community solar project. Currently, Washington State have allocated $10 million per biennium over the next four bienniums for low-income community solar. So essentially, instead of the community solar program that we built and designed downtown Squim, where we had our customers pay to subscribe and participate in the program, the state provides 100% of the funding for a solar project if the benefit goes to low-income customers. There's some cost criteria within that grant that would make it challenging for the PUD to be the grant recipient. So we're hoping that perhaps one of the tribes or other low-income entities could be interested in wanting to build this project where we can work together to provide solar for low-income individuals within our service territory. And also when I was out there, I talked to the tribe of potentially microgrid and battery systems that could be potentially tied into a community solar project. Although, you know, we kind of want to explore our own microgrid first so we know what we're doing before we sort of really push and promote something that's new to us, you know. But nonetheless, you know, it's something that's there's grant funding for that we ought to, or where we did talk to them about that.
Do they seem interested?
They seemed very interested. It was just last week, so I haven't had a lot of chance yet to follow up. And I should highlight, too, with these You know, none of these are for sure projects yet. It's just sort of examples of some, you know, our pursuit of partnerships with local entities to bring benefits to our customers.
Who are you talking to with the Macaw tribe?
Last name Green, works with the Housing Authority, and Bud Denny, who's the Director of Community Development with the Macaw tribe.
Are you got somebody involved in these discussions from PNNL, the Northwest Labs? Is anybody from PNNL involved in these discussions? Because they're interested in a low-income community solar project. And I mentioned Nia Bay to them, and they thought that was a great place to go. And
so PNNL wasn't with me on this specific trip. Rather, I had Phil Liu from Washington State Energy Office, because they're the ones who are administering the low-income community solar grant. But we did talk to PNNL at the Energy Innovations Conference about this particular project, and the intent is to bring them into the fold as well, for sure.
Yeah,
it's just like Colin have working more directly with PNNL rather than me.
Okay, I've got a contact that I need to give you, and a female, Diane, I don't have her card with me.
Diane with the tribe? Or with PNNL?
I'll get you her name.
Okay.
And close the loop there.
Yep, great. Thank you. And then also, we started a project. It started with the City of Sequim and Jamestown Scollum tribe. They approached me with an interest in applying for a grant for to put some fast chargers for electric vehicles at some Jamestown Scollum and perhaps City of Sequim locations. And after talking to them, we decided instead to apply for a grant to do an electrification plan. So rather than just go out and ask for funding to put in fast chargers, which are really big electric vehicle chargers that can charge an electric vehicle really fast and requires large transformers, I suggested that instead they pause a little bit and think about their current fleet vehicles and where they're located, and think about, you know, if they want to change their fleet to electric, you know, how do they do that in the most economic way? Because, for instance, with conventional gas vehicles, you know, any pavement can be a convenient parking lot, because when you get out in the morning, you start up the car and you can drive to a gas station and fuel up. But with electric vehicles, you generally going to want to charge overnight. And do they have a firm handle on if they have electrical infrastructure located close to their parking spaces? And by doing a plan, you know, we can partially show the state and other potential funders, you know, that we're working together and try to make economical, smart investments to their infrastructure. So we applied. It was a two-phase grant, Department of Commerce have for their Clean Energy Fund grant. And they accepted our grant, and instead they suggested that they invited us to apply for phase two. Then it turned out that the Squaxton Island Miskokomish tribes had applied for a similar grant, but in partnership with the WSU's Energy Office. And so when the Jamestown tribe talked to the Squaxton and Squamish tribe, they decided instead that they would partner to have a sort of a tribal electrification of transportation grant. So they're in the middle of submitting that application, and we provided a letter of support to support the tribe in that effort. City of Sequim likely will be left out of this specific effort, you know, but nonetheless, we're sort of, you know, building relationship, closer relationships with the City of Sequim to see where we can perhaps get other funding for other projects that will support our customers and our distribution system.
Speaking of upgrading your vehicles, as you were talking about for the tribe, makes me think, what about us? Do we have a plan for transitioning to electric vehicles? And, you know, I see that we just awarded 4 vehicles. Did we consider or even look at what the price would have been for electric? I would assume it would have been much more, but.
Well, for the large trucks like that, there's not an electric option now, but for some of the fleet vehicles, we've looked into before, but the pricing has been cost prohibitive at this point.
But it's, I think, something that we should always
Yeah, we have. Yeah.
You know, John Purvis did a presentation on our overall plan for education and transportation.
Yeah, I remember that. He said like a 30% increase in load for the peninsula.
Yeah, over a 40-year period.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's the idea behind an electrification plan. Because if you talk to John, you know, I think what he'll tell you that we're ideally suited if people opt to charge during low load hours. But if people opt to charge, you know, with fast charging during high load hours, you know, it could become very expensive for us to expand our distribution system. So at a minimum, as our customers talk more about electric cars, you know, I think you behoove us to engage with them to help educate them on, you know, how we can work together to meet their needs.
And I think it's also going to push us to looking at time of use rates as well.
And that's the end of my slides. Stop moving forward, but the next slide says thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you very much.
Good job.
Thanks.
Okay, board action items. Did we capture anything?
Okay. Staff has been looking for the possibility of providing video recordings of the board meeting transition to the current audience.
Thank you. All right, we're moving back to comments from the public. So people that are virtual in, raise your hands or whatever.
Christine has
a hand up. Go ahead, Christine.
Hey, I just have a couple of quick comments, and one of them is I'm just curious if Commissioner Waddell, I didn't quite understand why you were opposed to the compensation package for John Purvis's contract, and if it was, you know, so for public record, I'm just curious what your opposition was.
I can't discuss that at this point.
Oh, okay. So it's not public. It's public information, then.
I've said everything for the public record. I can right now.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. And my second request is that if we are going to, stop our membership with Northwest River Partners, I'm wondering if the ratepayers could be involved in that, in contributing to that decision, because many of us are 100% opposed to being members of Northwest River Partners and have been for many years. And so if it carries any weight, that the public could possibly move that along to a zero membership, I would appreciate that if we could be instrumental in helping that along.
That's what we said.
I think that's what we did.
I'm sorry. You know what? It's hard, you know, typing documents and listening to you guys at the same time.
If you'd like us to make a contribution to River Partners, we can do that.
Oh, well, no, that's quite all right.
Yeah, we'd love it to do it.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Christine.
Any other comments, questions? Anybody else?
I don't see any other hands up.
Okay, good. No executive session, so there's no other business to come before the commission. We will stand adjourned. Thank you very much for your participation.